Honorable members, why don't we get closer so that no one is forced to raise their voice, and our friends at the back, I don't know if you have particular constraints. If you don't, we wouldn't mind when you close. Honorable members, our presenters, members of media, you are all welcome, and thank you for accepting our invitation. We expanded our public hearings to accommodate all of you, because we believe that the matter before us is a matter of great public interest, and the challenges facing us require your wisdom. So we value very much your presence and readiness to make submissions. We want to say outright that let nothing constrain you. We don't have a censorship department. We want to hear everything you want to say in our own ways, so that you can empower us as members of this national legislature to take the necessary decisions. We have here the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa, Contralesa, represented by Mr. Solani Mkiva and Prince Davan. We have the National Interfaith Council of South Africa, represented by Reverend T. Mvambo, who is the Secretary General of that organization. And we have the National Prosecuting Authority, represented by Mrs. P. How do you spell that? Pithi. I see you have a colleague whose name doesn't appear here. Advocate Ketelo. Okay, we are all welcome in this meeting. I guess you've been following the deliberations and the questions which arose in these public hearings. So with your permission, I'm not going to repeat that. Safe to say that there has been a public perception that this committee seeks to lower the age of consent from 16, which was never on our agenda, was never the case. We have been talking about the decriminalization of consensual sex between adolescents. There was also the question, why are we talking about ages between 12 and 16? And there was a proposal, for instance, from the Southern African Bishops Conference, why we should not include age 10, and that remains a matter of debate. There was also the question whether or not persons who have committed such acts should appear on the national register. So as the committee, we are really listening, and we want to be educated by ourselves, so that when we consider the matters and take the decisions, we must be wiser than we are now. We are going to start with the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa. So we will call upon Mr. Zolani Mkiva to address us. It's just that the room we have today is not very friendly. We would have preferred that you sit here so that you can face it. Maybe you should come this side. Mr. Bassett, if you don't mind, you can move this side and let Mr. Mkiva sit there. Okay. Both of you, yeah, come to the front.
Thank you, Chairperson. We want to start off by bringing you warm greetings from the national leadership of Condoleezza, to you, Chairperson, members of Parliament, members of the committee, the guests who represent different institutions here. We have been mandated by the energy of Condoleezza as a response to the invitation to come before this committee to present our view as the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa regarding the item on the agenda here today. And Prince Manene Tabane, who is our NEC member, is going to lead in terms of that particular presentation. With your indulgence, Chairperson, I would like to hand over to Prince Manene. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and after that, I don't think we're going to waste time with that was directed to the youth, raised by contract. Chairperson, the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa, we have a view on this matter, and our view is that when children are found to be engineered for the duty, our belief is that corrective measures must be taken in order to discourage them from continuing doing that. Issues of disciplinary process must be taken, and it should not be for retribution, but rather for reprimand, and follow the rehabilitation process again. Those found engaging in such activities, because they are minors, we should not encourage them to continue. As if you find your children or your kid in the room engaging in sexual activities, to which should be nothing that has happened wrong. You should just say, okay, after finishing that, you should come here, I want to talk to you. It's just anomaly for kids to engage in sex, especially when you talk about age. In such situations, we cannot pretend and say all this way, and yet all this not way. In other words, Chairperson, we cannot support the bill which seeks to encourage sex between children. Our view is that sex is made for adults who are male couples. From the traditional and cultural point of view, we have hold the view that it is not acceptable, or will it be acceptable, to justify sexual engagement of children. In our culture, we do not determine age of engaging in sexual activities by years. Well, of course, because of the constitution that we have, we made anything acceptable that effect to at least 18 years or 21 years and above for a teenager. We can allow that situation to happen when talking in terms of the age. Let me just, we do not determine the age of engaging in sexual activities covered by years, as I mentioned that. But this aspect will differ from our ethnic different communities. Let me make for an example. If you hear from our areas where we come from in Eastern Cape, when you try to propose a girl and yet you have not been to the initiation school, you're even told by that girl that I don't want to be a friend, meaning that I cannot have an affair with you without you first going to the initiation school. Because that simply tells you that that alone aspect, it is an indication that we do not allow our kids to engage sex at their end stages. So from that end, you have been told this is the principle that you have to at least reach a certain stage. And that mentioned earlier that we were not determining this by ages, by years. But it was that when the family teaches that even again at this stage now, we can negotiate on the issues of the border, that this kid can go and get married. Not that we'll be dictated by their terms. If we have found them engaging in sexual activities, we then say, no, let it be, because they have done this. And from that point, we cannot buy just any mistake by a feeling young individuals who have been found engaging in sexual activities. Then we can say, on those basis, let this allow it to happen everywhere. It cannot be accepted. There's this bit now. We're currently battling with the moral degeneration in our side. We have lost the moral canvas. How much more causes are we doing? Mama is saying, yeah, but we're going to get a chance. And if nothing is wrong, it's not gone wrong. a chairperson, person among the few that if we allow that situation, really, first things that we have never seen happening, some of them are just heard from the Bible, that there was a deity called Sodom and Gomorrah. Are we going to reveal that now? Really, we are silently creating or going back to the state of Sodom and Gomorrah. At this stage, we should encourage our kids in African indigenous kids, such as Inketo, Ubu, and then you need to come to Mazan and to the boys, which is called Mrabara, Okutak, Okusunga, and then you need to come. But these games were very of good experience in our culture because they really make these kids to focus rather than to engage in antisocial activities. So if you encourage them to do those activities, those games, in a way that we're giving a chance to grow up to a certain stage where we can then agree to say, let them do whatever they cannot, they can engage in such activities at a certain level, rather than to allow them to continue to do that at their stages. It's a pity because we are engulfed by the Western influence. To an extent that the games that I'm talking about, we are no longer playing with them. We are no longer encouraging our kids to do them. Maybe one can allude to the fact that because of the Western influence, these games are not given space, even in our schools. At worst, if our kids will go to the multiple schools, maybe they are not trained or they are not catered for. So it really shows that you are exposed to these challenges. It is clear that the outcome here is that the victim will be an African child. If this bill can be given thus up. There is a connection here. If we allow such kids at those tender ages to engage in sex and it be educated, what if, for example, you are found an old man having an affair with that 10-year-old girl? What are we going to say? Because the point we do from this girl, it is legislated. There is no problem if I do that. We still have a challenge of child-headed homes where there are no parents. Because of the social economic issues, definitely so this challenge will be posed to this challenge. What are we going to say if an old man will continue doing that? And you realize later that now these kids are pregnant. Ah, yes, this shall not be doomed. Because this encourages a teenage pregnancy and teenage parenting. If we keep quiet with parents and say that legislation take our role as parenting, then what is the point of parenting? Because our belief is that this role should be given, or parents should be encouraged to take role in giving direction to their kids, rather than to say, let the legislation do our role as parents. I don't think it will be enough, and it will be catastrophic. It simply means that is a reverse in what we are doing, trying to build a social, trying to build a land and a moral life like. If really the majority of us in the country are Christians and the rest of the rural areas are under the traditional leadership, this shouldn't be an issue, Jefferson. That would be backbreaking and we'll be here today discussing this issue. I think that some of our laws are just rushing to conclude. And I don't think there is a point here to say we'll be here today discussing this matter simply because one young girl consented, had a consensual sex with the other boys, and then they didn't say, can you come and discuss this matter? And yet, last week, for that pressing matter, that we should have taken care of. Thank you.
What do you want to add? Well, Jefferson, the only point that I would like to add here is that we shouldn't make pieces of legislation that are going to end up suffocating our people. And the manner in which the laws are made, I think there should be consistency. They should be informed by what is happening in our communities generally. I don't think it will be right if a law-making institution will just be told to make a law by another state institution, because it creates a problem. We want to see the law-making process coming. Not another state institution throwing a javelin and instructing another institution to say to this. We are saying that because in the past we had a similar situation where the Constitutional Court told Parliament to make a law which we were opposed, even though it was passed by this Constitution, by this particular Parliament. So we want to anticipate the same, that we may just come here as the Congress of Traditional Leaders of South Africa, as a formality to authenticate a process which is questionable. So this particular issue, we don't think that really it requires of us to make a special law that is going to deal with this issue. Much as we agree about the issue of not criminalizing the act once children are found to be doing that, we agree with that. But we don't think that families and parents should abdicate their responsibility and expect Parliament and other institutions of state to take their role in society. We believe that if pieces of legislation like this, they become law, that they will destroy the family structure of our communities, which is a solid structure for our society. So if we keep on making laws that are going to suffocate, where parents are left with no authority over their children, we think that we are creating a scenario of outsourcing our children to state institutions. We don't think that is African. We think that some of the things we just need to solidify the family structure and ensure that the parents are empowered to continue to play the role that they have always played. Otherwise, we will end up with millions and millions of pieces of legislation that end up confusing society at the end of the day. So that's our view as the Congress of Traditional Leaders. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Before I open the debate, I just want to clarify one matter. According to the presentation, initiation served a purpose for preventing things like consensual sex between adolescents. Another view which was expressed here was that as soon as the kids come from initiation, they want to experiment with sex. And if that view is correct, it would mean that initiation does not serve the purpose. The other view that you are expressing is that indigenous gays could help, but that they are no longer practicing. And you are trying to blame it on Western culture. I can't see how Western culture goes to Nongoma and goes to all these traditional communities and tell them not to practice their culture. And actually the Constitution not only protects their culture, indigenous cultures, but also indigenous religions. Doesn't that mean that yourself as traditional leaders are not doing your work? Because every Sunday the Roman Catholics go to church, the Hindus go to church, the Rastafarians, everybody, to teach their followers what to do. Now if their followers don't follow them, they can't blame traditional communities. And similarly, why should traditional communities blame Western culture if their systems are collapsing? Now, this moral degeneration that you are referring to, maybe we have moral degeneration because you are not making your systems work. Now, that puts the governments and the legislature in a situation where things are happening which would not happen if your structures were effective. And the consequence
was that government makes a law criminalizing these extreme children, which happened because their systems are not effective. Now the Constitutional Court comes and say, no, decriminalize these activities, responding to what is happening in society. So I'm not sure that the purpose of this legislation is to encourage sex amongst children. It's actually a recognition that it does happen. And because it is happening, we should not use the criminal justice to solve that problem. It's a societal matter. So maybe we should be hearing from you, what is it that you will do to prevent children from engaging in these sexual activities at an early age? But the government cannot be expected to use the criminal justice system to solve things that parents and society should solve. I hope your response will hear more about that from yourself. The old man and a child, there's no law that is going to allow adults to have sex with children and say they consented. I haven't seen any such intention anywhere in this proposal. But lastly, Master Mkhize, the Constitutional Court is not ordering us. You see, in the past we had the supremacy of Parliament, which anything that the Parliament wills became law. But now we have the supremacy of the Constitution, and which means that all laws must be consistent with the Constitution. And the judiciary has been tasked by the Constitution to supervise or ensure that the laws that are made by this Parliament are consistent with the Constitution. And if they are not, then the Constitutional Court has the right to strike down the Constitution or refer the matters back to us to say, bring this in line with the Constitution. So I don't think that there's a problem of being instructed, because the Constitution is the supreme law of the country. It is binding on the judiciary, on the executive, and on this Parliament. So that is the state of affairs. But I'm not speaking on behalf of this House. I just wanted to assist you to understand the angle from which we come and the concord comes, but the honorable members here are here to engage with yourself. And then you are also entitled to defend your positions. So I've not ruled out anything that you're saying. Members will engage you, and then you can defend, and we move from there. Honorable members, can I open the floor for you?
I think I'll be interested to hear their response after the inputs that we have made. There was some general questions, so maybe if they could respond, and we can take it from there.
Can I give you the floor, as indicated by Honorable Bonga?
No, indeed, Chairperson, the traditional leaders have got some limited powers. Of course, there is a history to that. But let me speak about the situation in the country right now. You see, if you have got a content that you see on the national television and national radio, the viewership and the listenership obviously is the majority of our people, but if what they see and what they hear encourages them to seek towards, you know, the particular Eurocentric way of doing things, and they are bombarded with that on a daily basis, there isn't much that we can do. there isn't much that we can do. Christianity is new in this country, but the authority that it has today, because there was an orchestration on the part of the colonial state to shift the eyes and the ears and the minds and the hearts of our people from that which is their design of living, their culture, and say this, the doctrines of Christianity is the way to go. 200 years later, 70% are Christians. So we believe that similarly, the same is going to happen, even though it is not institutionalized by the state. But if what you see on the media, the influence of the media, does not only run sprints, it runs a marathon and it takes the people with in terms of that. Surely, our children, if they view the things that they view on national television, it makes them to act in the manner that they are found to be in certain instances. We do try to do our best, but we think that the traditional leaders need to be given support, they need to be empowered through their councils so that they can be able to dispense, because they don't act as individuals. The structure of traditional leadership is a communal structure, as it were. Of course, there's contestation at that level because of what we're talking about, which is Eurocentric. There are civil society organizations that when we try to do this, they tell people to do that. And in a democracy, in a constitutional democracy, people have got a right to express their views. So I'm saying, Jefferson, that we, at a family level, we believe that there is a role to be played by parents. And we believe that the families must be given a space. And if something it cannot be resolved at the level of a family, it goes to the next level of the clan. If it cannot be resolved from that level, it goes to the next level of a tribe of that particular nation. So we are saying that we would want to be allowed to do things in the manner in which we've been trying to do. Now, you were saying, Jefferson, for instance, when it comes to the issue of traditional games and so on, which are not are no longer being exercised. If the syllabus in schools is still Eurocentric, Jefferson, and these games are not given space even at that level, our children spend more time in schools. The whole day they are there, of course, we have few hours with them, wherein we have to do our role as parents. But we want to ensure that even the education is an African-centered education. And we need to look into the syllabus there, so that at the end of the day, we don't say the traditional or the institutional traditional leadership is abdicating its responsibility. It's not doing what it's supposed to do. It is not as simple as that. Chair. Thank you.
Chairperson, thanks again. Let me come to the question that you've raised around the issue of moral generation. You have then said that it's not us, that the traditional leaders are not taking the lead. Because if you talk about the Christians every Sunday they go to church, and what is it that you are doing as traditional leaders? Can I just go back a bit, Chairperson? If you remember before our democracy in 1994, with other state organs that we viewed as blacks, that is very much opposite to us. If I can mention the Department of Police, if I can mention the intelligence, talk about the defense, everybody knew that those were against us and they killed us. It's clear and it's known. But after 1994, these state organs, they were never demanded. Instead, corrective measures were taken to address that so that they can suit the current situation that we are. My belief is that same as the traditional leaders, they were also corrupted by the apartheid regime. And they were also given all sorts of brains for that before you can get a land. And then now I don't think the correct steps that were given to these other state organs were done equally to the issue of traditional leaders. the issue of empowerment to the sectional leaders is not equal to what has happened to the state workers. Hence, you will find that we are struggling to get control because we do not have resources. If you talk in terms of comparison with the state workers, my firm belief is that if these traditional leaders can be given those kind of capacitation, I think the issues that we have raised can be easily addressed. Because honestly speaking, this is what comes from the resources, more than what we have, the authority. To accept an authority, you don't have resources, they cut you, so that you realize your goal. The issue that I've mentioned is that the role of initiation around the issue of free land of the effects of the adolescents. There is a myth, Chairperson, that we're battling with it now, to say that after initiation, these young boys, they've been fed all over, they've been instructed that they must go and test the images that they are working, which is not the case. We are battling to address it because, as I've said, there is this pressure that comes from outside, which I don't think if we've been powered as traditional leaders, it will be an issue to address that. But because we are less capacitated, so we'll be faced with those challenges. Thank you, sir.
I don't want to go into broader questions of transformation. Safe to remind you that I attended the opening of the House of Traditional Leaders addressed by the President, who challenged traditional leaders to take up responsibility to transform the institution and come up with transformative ideas. So if you want to be empowered, I think the ball is in your court. Also, you will agree that there is a moral regeneration movement launched on the 11th of April 2002. I think if you participate in that structure, you will be able to address some of this moral decay that we are seeing today. So I would advise you to go back to that. But also, I don't think it will assist us to blame Christianity. Because, you know, this year we say this is the year of the Freedom Charter, which says South Africa belongs to all of us, black and white, and our constitution enjoins us to respect and protect unity in diversity. So everybody must be free to believe in what they want to believe, Christians, Hindu, Muslims, and so on. So that, and the Bill of Rights protects all the religions. So the fact that there are other religions, whether they are big or small, should not be the issue. So I think one can advise you to go back to your own structures, build your own structures, assert yourself, make sure that they deliver what you want delivered. But let me take a ball back to the Honorable Members of Parliament to express themselves. I'll start with Honorable Swart, Honorable Maila.
Thank you, Jay, and thank you, Prince Tabani, for your input. I must say, I didn't see that you were blaming Christianity. I think you used it as an example of the influence of Western culture. You said, I think that is how you went, because clearly in your submission you say if the majority of us are Christians in a country, then it wouldn't be an issue. So but I thank you for that clarity. I would like to ask you, from traditional leadership perspective, how would you traditionally deal with consensual sex of children, 12 to 16, if it was happening in traditional manners? I'd just be interested if there is a mechanism in tribal custom, how to deal with it. Because the challenge is that we've got a criminal law now that is not ineffective, and the court struck it down basically, but it hasn't, the reason the court struck it down was because the court said it hasn't been helping with the problems of teenage pregnancy, HIV AIDS, and that was the main reason they decriminalized. They're not saying, it's very clear, the judgment said, it is not about whether children should engage in sex or not. Not about that. It's a very narrow issue of decriminalization. That's the first point. Secondly, at the age of 16, so the example that you use of an older man having sex with a 13-year-old, that will be statutory rape. That's statutory rape. What he's looking at is that 12, 16 year, and that's why I asked you from a traditional perspective, how would you deal with that? When it comes to your attention that a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old and a 15-year-old are engaging in consensual sex, how do you traditionally deal with that? Secondly, the point is made that you say you agree that one should not criminalize the act. If I heard you correctly, I've got the note here. Not criminalize the act. That's exactly what we are grappling with. So then, it's the criminalization that we are sitting with and saying, surely if you would agree that a 12-year-old or a 13-year-old that engages in consensual sex, the 15-year-old, do not go to jail for that. That is what is possible now, although we've got aversion and everything. So I agree, as a Christian, with your sentiments, 100%, and your traditional values. But the dilemma we've got with is how we're going to deal with that very narrow issue. Should the criminal law be the answer? And maybe it's not. It's, as you correctly say, it's the families should be dealing with it. They should be empowered to deal with that. Maybe we need social development intervention. If they can't deal with it, then a clan, then the tribe. And the statute only comes later if there's a problem. So we need to, all of us, accept responsibility. And I'd just like to hear whether you would agree with that sentiment, because then we are basically almost on the same page, if you clearly understand. We've had many submissions, people that have come and haven't quite understood what the judgment said. And I mean that with the greatest respect, many, many people, when it's still 16 is the age of consent. But what we're dealing with is children, and how do we deal with that the most effectively? And we had a lady here that was at the age of 13. She engaged in consensual sex with an adult. And it, for 20 years, it took her a long time to deal with that. And then he said to her, but that's wrong, you could have laid a charge. That is statutory rape. And I said, but if it was a 16-year-old, you would have been charged as a 13-year-old for engaging in consensual sex. And he said, but that's ridiculous. As a Christian, she said, you understand, so it's not a straightforward issue, it's a complex issue, but it's actually a very narrow issue. If you call it. Thank you, Prince, Your Excellency, for allowing.
I'm
going to
allow you to respond to that question. I don't want to bombard you with that, and both of you are free to respond.
The question. With your indulgence, I don't remember the honourable member introducing.
Honourable?
Sure. Well, thank you for that question. I think, let me start off by saying, yes, indeed, we didn't blame Christianity whatsoever. We can't do that. We are Christians ourselves, you know. What is, we uphold our culture, we mix between our cultural ways and Christianity. On Saturday, we slaughter to salute our ancestors, and on Friday, we go to church. And some of us, if it's on Monday, they go to a communist party meeting. Now, it becomes an unfortunate situation when kids are found to be engaging into a sexual activity at an age that is considered to be underage, like between 12 and 16, as you have mentioned here. That issue, it becomes a scandal if it's known in the community. And when it is found in that particular family, we try by all possible means to deal with it internally. By taking disciplinary steps within the family, talk to the children, punish them in the manner that we would think that would be in line with their age. And I wouldn't go to the details of what type of punishment. I don't think there's a need for me to do that. But a punishment is intended to reprimand so that this does not recur. This is the intention. I think Prince Manene has said that we don't engage in retribution. We reprimand certain, we take corrective disciplinary action in order to re-educate the kids if they might have been misled along the line. That's what we do. And that's why I mentioned all the steps. If the family, if it goes out of hand in the family, then it goes to the next level and the next level until it reaches perhaps the office of the king. Those are the steps that we take. And we know that it's a difficult one, but the difference is that today we live in a world where there's technology. And something will happen in a space of the immediate family, and next year it is all over the country, or even world. And I think that is why, that is what brings us here, in a sense. Otherwise, it would have been a matter that would have been arrested within that particular school, and the parents are called in to deal with that situation. And it's contained. There's also a principle of containment, where you contain this issue so that it does not spread, so that people want to try and do it, you know, again. It's totally discouraged by society, but we cannot do it forcefully. We have to employ a high level of diplomacy at family level and deal with it from there. Some parents even go to the extent of slaughtering for it to show and illustrate that this is not done. This is alien, as it were, from our society. And that's how our culture deals with these issues. I don't want to go to further, but that's the spirit with which we deal with it. But as I say, we find ourselves to have technology and other things which are good, which have advantages and disadvantages and so on and so forth. Perhaps that brings us here, and that's why we are discussing in the manner that we discuss. Otherwise, we do have an instrument of dealing with it.
Did you say those steps are enough? You don't need to call the police and to institute the criminal charges against the ship.
Let me allow him to take it.
Okay, did I answer your question? I just wanted to add from what my colleague has said to the honorable member. Culturally, honorable member, there are programs that are in place, they were in place and they were effective in the past. But because, as I've said, of the influence from the West now, they are disintegrating. There is what we call it Usolwa Gwendoli. If you attend to those, they are effectively picturing it in exalting at a place called Tokosa. There are women, and I've been there. These kids, they are not forced to go there. They go there on Thursday. At levels that are being given there, clearly, they talk to this challenge by all women to say, for as long as you are young, your future should focus to education. You must make sure you don't get pregnant. Apparently, you pass matric, you go to university. It's a pity because those programs, also as I said, they are not well supported. Because even for these kids to go there, it's fine. They would need to transport to go to these areas because it cannot be held everywhere. They have to go to a certain area, let alone it's rotating. But the pace is very slow because of the lack of resources. But I've seen the girls that have participated. The majority of them, they are not pregnant even today. Some of them, after the process, they will come back and openly say that I've passed the trick, I've gone through my university, I'm not pregnant. Now, I think this is time. But my view is that if we can encourage along those lines, it will also assist with this challenge. But the old figures who have said already that we have got these ways, but we cannot force them to do it. But the challenge would be now, in cases where there are child at homes, who are responsible to give the money to go to these areas, to these kinds of gatherings, where they are being taught these lessons, so that they keep them clean up until they reach a certain level. But honestly speaking, I've seen that working around those issues. I was mentioning, as part of one of our national programs that we used to have, let alone it gets challenged now, because there will be going to say they were violating their human rights. But if you go there, they will openly tell you that you have not been forced, you are not forced, and it's encouraging because gradually it's growing the value of attending those programs. Thank you.
You're saying because those steps and systems have been weakened, we should now allow the police to arrest those kids who do it, lay charges against them, convict them, send them to prison.
No, that's not what we're saying. We don't say that. they shouldn't be children. Yeah.
Thanks very much, Jefferson, and thanks to the leadership of Controllers for your presentation and your contributions. I think, Jefferson, we should all agree that a wrong perception has been created, that the Constitutional Court judgment has instructed Parliament to come up with legislation that allows children to engage in sex. That is a wrong perception that has been created. Now, all of us should now deal with correcting that perception. Because we're agreeing with Quantaleza here that inside, children do become naughty. Now, should it happen that children become naughty? Should they be isolated? It is a vital matter. It should be dealt with by the human. That's what we are saying. But unfortunately, in public space, what is in public space is Parliament is coming up with legislation that allows children to engage in sex, and that is not. So for now, it's the duty of all us to agree that the society, the South African society is a responsible society. It is not society which can allow children to engage in activities which will later lead South Africa to become Sodoma and Gomorrah, as you have said. That is not what we are doing. Thank you very much, Jesus.
Honorable Bonga.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I think after having listened very carefully to the presentation of the leadership of Controllers, I think they are generally agreeing with our sentiments of the committee. But what I'm seeing also is what Honorable Mahile has already said, that I think we together need to deal with this perception that of thinking would we are encouraging young adolescents to engage into the activity. I think in the main what has been said is that the court ruled that we should just decriminalize. In my view, it could have been something very, very, very light, because we'll just get to that specific portion. But our point of departure from our sitting is that the age of consent is still 16. So the only specific area that we're dealing with is that if it happens that a person between the age of 12 and 16 engages in that activity, we should not classify it as a criminal offense, but we should do exactly what they're presenting on. That the families must get into the space. The families must get into the space. Traditional leadership must get into the space up until the level of the king, before we can think of a criminal justice system intervention in this regard. Because, and I've listened very carefully to their presentation. The presentation also is around issues of the issues that we're also concerned about as the committee, the social cohesion and so on and so forth. But the research out there tells you, Chair, that the teenage pregnancy is very high. Research tells you that those who are going to this Uhlolo are far minimal compared to those who are not going. So those are the issues. But what we need in the main, we want the National Controller to kind of present to Parliament a program that will maximize those kind of programs. We want the National Controller to present to us on how do we deal with this matter on a more cultural and what do you say, value-based societal approach. Because as the legislature ourselves, we have taken a lot of other presentations, a lot of presentations. I think we need to also be assisted by controllers, by parents. Parents is the first line, because they stay with these adolescents. But I see the role of controllers here to be a much more important role that we will need in terms of taking this matter to our people, because they are also at the center of where these things are happening, and so that we build a value-based society. So from where I'm sitting, I don't think we're generally far from each other, and we need to have further engagement in terms of developing programs now, going to the community, making everyone understand what are we about as the people. Thanks.
I think Honorable Maila and Honorable Bonga have further sharpened the focus. Do you want to respond to that? And I think we're getting somewhere. Before I get to Honorable Mpashen.
Well, Chairperson, we can only say we welcome the spirit with which the two honorable members are supporting us in terms of our presentation here, and say that we agree with their proposals of looking into programs that can see some of these practices being revived, for instance, and supported, and we make them, you know, annual things or biannual activities to ensure that we take this kind of education to the communities out there. We support that. We think that it would be very helpful. It's not that we are going to be reinventing anything. These things exist, but they need the support, as they say, and focused attention, the value based that you're talking about. We want to accept that, and the Sandra Lessa will be readily available to lead with the support of this committee and parliament, and we will do our level best to ensure that we do that which is expected from us.
Bonga is suggesting a program by yourself, because I have been looking at the Moral Generation Program. I think your contribution is missing there. So if we embrace what Honorable Bonga is saying, develop a program and infuse it into the Moral Generation Movement, which is government supported, then we won't be complaining about lack of resources. So I think you should really ensure that Contra Lessa participates in the MRM at all levels. You have, as the Honorable Maylene Bonga saying, Honorable Sartre has said that you have a greater role to play, and we want to see that role being played. Honorable Mutabo.
Thank you very much, Honorable Chair, colleagues and presenters, and Contra Lessa. Chairperson, I may be somehow conflicted. Oh, thank you so much. Thank you, Chairperson. And thank you, Contra Lessa, for your presentation. And I thought maybe you'll somehow touch on your programs that I know you have. I thought you may also touch on programs such as Indoni, which program is helping our young girls to avert involving themselves in sexual activities. And what I would like also to add to your presentation is that also I thought you also touch on the role of the councils, the role which queens, kings and traditional councils play in ensuring that our young girls, you know, there are programs in those councils which, no.
I think honorable members also are entitled.
Maybe they would like to know much on such programs.
Yes, honorable listeners, you are entitled to interrupt because we might be using a vocabulary that is not accessible.
Okay.
Yeah. Is there anything you wanted to raise? You're fine. Proceed, honorable Mutabo.
I would like to know what the Indoni program particularly involves. This is something that I'm familiar with.
No, yeah, I think I could see that term causes legitimate unrest at the back.
Okay, thank you, Chair. I think they will unpack it. Yes, thank you.
Name of an organization or a program driven by an organization, but as she correctly says, they will unpack it.
So I want to touch on the issue of the role which the queen, the king, and the traditional castle play in this regard. I'll also request leaders from our communities today to also show this honorable committee the role which these councils play in that regard. And as already alluded to by my colleagues here, I would like to bring to our leaders here attention that the order, court order by the Constitutional Court, is not per se reducing the age for our minors to have that activity. You know, in our culture, I know we kind of go into the traditional court and start talking about these things. It may be a taboo of some kind. So what I'm saying is that maybe attack all these programs, very progressive programs, which traditional councils, queen's councils, the king's councils have, like Ndoni. You know, joining with the houses of traditional leaders, I know you have very, very progressive programs in this regard. I was thinking maybe if you elaborate much on those, you'll assist this committee. You'll really assist us. Thank you so much.
You know, former minister, Zola Swinya, Dr. Zola Swinya, introduced a program of queens and structures which had to be formed at national, provincial, local level, consisting of queens, because those are the mothers of the nation who actually bring up this children. But I think the question that Honorable Mthabo is raising is how much have you done to sustain such structures which would have been supported by the Department of Social Development and others. So when you say you are not empowered, one could raise the question, how much or to what extent have you used those structures which were meant to empower you?
Thank you, sir. Let me just start by taking the issue of Ndoni. Ndoni is an independent organization that deals with the issues of young girls, which we collaborate in their programs, we participate in their programs. But when you look at this organization that deals with those issues, that they are promoting the well-being of these young girls, it's run by certain people in Ndoni. Then around the issue of king, queens, and traditional councils, in the Eastern Cape, there is an organization which is called Imbunga Yamakhosikazi Akunkulu, which they do have programs that talk to these challenges. But the question and the concern maybe would be, how effective are they in terms of driving those programs? These structures are there, chairperson. They only differ in terms of their effectiveness to the challenges that are being raised, challenges that we are even as individuals or organizations that are concerned with. In terms of the traditional councils that we do have, yes, there are programs that they talk to these challenges. But then always we have said, then they said that for the more countries that should participate more as a generation so that we can do away with the issue of lack of resources, which I think some of the traditional councils, much as they do their way, they will always fall back to the issue of these challenges that we are not capacitated. But programs are in place, these programs are there. I can say.
You know, traditional councils have offices, have faxes, the traditional leaders get salaries, they have cars,
I don't know what other capacitation is there you need. And also, if existing structures like Mbumba and Indoni are weak, the question is, what are you doing to strengthen them? Because you see, we look at you as our leaders. And then we can't afford to be listening to our leaders crying. We want our leaders to lead us. Honorable, did you raise it?
Thank you, Justice. Just to welcome the presentation from Contralesa. And just to endorse what my colleagues have said in terms of not encouraging the intention of the bill, the order of the court has got to do just with decriminalizing consent of sex between minor children, especially looking at the age between 12 and 16. So I think what we just need to clear is that the bill itself is not really trying to encourage sex between minors. It's actually trying to legislate in such a way that we do not criminalize children in the event sex happens. Because when children are growing up, there will be mistakes, but once there is a mistake, a child should not be punished, and punished in a way that should actually create a stigma. That's the intention of the bill. So for now, it's good to have you coming in, and then we look at how you see the bill, and also to listen to your suggestions, which I think are very valuable. The perspective that you brought up, the cultural, traditional perspective in terms of child rearing, is very important, because this is what some of the institutions that have already presented have indicated. Education is very important. It could be education from religious perspective, it could be education from traditional perspective, which has got to do much more with what you're doing. It could be the education system itself in schools, where children need to be taught that to have sex is not good. But in the event it happens, we need to know how to deal with it in a way that actually allows the child to continue to grow normally. Because for now, section 15 and 16 of the bill, in a manner in which the court has interpreted it, is actually violating the rights of children, because we criminalize children. And that it becomes an impediment to child protection, development, and survival. One area of doubt, actually, also just one comment about, you talked about Uswala Wendombi, which is an area that is still very highly debated, and is looked at from various dimensions. With the traditional perspective, they're saying it's okay, and then you hear other voices saying, no, it's not okay because it invades in the privacy of the adult child. So I think those debates need to continue, so that somehow we manage to come to a situation where we agree as to whether virginity testing is something that is ideal, that should take place. If you look at it from the perspective of the charter, the Women's Charter for Effective Equality, it emphasizes choice, but also choice is something that has got to do with age. At what point do you say that a child can choose, those their children? At what age will we say that they are old enough to choose and understand what is right and wrong in order for them to be in the position to expose themselves to such practices? But all in all, the point that is important that we need to put across is that as traditional leaders, it's very important for you to really take a lead in matters of this nature. And not only in issues that have to do with sex. For now, if you look at the fact that the country has got a crisis of drug addiction, which also is taking place in rural areas. In crime itself, you hear of peasant pay points where the vehicles are hijacked. We need to see active participation of traditional leadership in trying to combat such behavior. Thank you very much, Jefferson.
Would you also remember that nobody in the rural areas can have a bottle store unless you have given them the right to have a site? Now, inside villages, there are so many bottle stores, and who are the customers? Their children. After drinking those kids from Friday to Monday, they don't sleep. So I think Honorable Majagi says, you have got to take the leadership. Some of these things you have the power to stop, and then I think you should stop them.
Otherwise, you are destroying the society that you are supposed to be leading. Honorable Bungan.
Thank you. Clara, I just wanted to find out, normally there used to be this matter used to be a civil matter in the African culture. Am I not correct? That parents would probably come together if such a thing happens. And then they solve it between two families. Has that power been taken by parliament or by Western civilization or anything? It is not still there. Secondly, I think you have listened to my colleagues and agree with them that this has never been a criminal matter in tradition. Do you in the bill have any specific things to say you would rather they be put in this manner? Thank you.
Interesting observation. That this matter was never criminal. Now why should we make it criminal? Over to you.
No, certainly. The power of the family and families to deal with these matters from where we come from is still there. And that is why we are raising a concern. To say that much as you want to look into it from a point of view of coming up with a bill, that bill may have unintended consequences to actually take away that power amongst our people. This is a cause for concern for us. We believe that the family structure is still best placed to deal with these issues. I think that we are overreacting by specifically coming up with a bill. It has never been criminal. And we do know that it does happen from time to time, even if it's once in a while, but we have a way of dealing with it at a family level. I'm not sure about the last question.
What I was saying, that I was just asking for your assistance in how the bill should be shaped. In other words, what exactly in it that you feel that they're going to give a wrong impression, and so on.
In the first place, Shepherd, we don't even think that we should have come this route. So I would find it difficult for me to even suggest, because it's as if there is no instrument that is in existence. You don't make a bill when there are instruments and protocols in place. Because when you make a bill, you are basically duplicating or destroying the other one in favor of the new. Why don't we codify what exists? If we can empower the traditional councils, which, for instance, are in existence, and they exist with a legislative mandate that is derived from the law, why do you continue to create other instruments over others? Because the new ones will naturally undermine the ones that have been in existence. So our view on this matter is that we are raising this concern, Chair. We agree that we mustn't criminalize the act. If the Constitution is silent on the matter, then we must find way of ensuring that it is not silent. I think that is the message which the Constitutional Court maybe was trying to communicate, that maybe the Constitution is silent on the matter of it being criminal or it being decriminalized.
I think that what is proposed actually supports what your position. Because your position says, in the traditional communities, this is not a criminal matter. It is something that is dealt with internally. But the system of law that we have makes it a criminal matter. And the Constitutional Court says no, decriminalize it and bring the situation actually in line with what you want. So
so there shouldn't be a problem. Now, I think the public perception, as Honorable Mandela was saying, is that we want to allow it. But that's not the case, as he said. And I think he suggested that we really need to take collective responsibility to educate the people and show what the true state of affairs is. So I think the Honorable Bonga also said we're not far apart. And I think after this, if you go and develop that program that Honorable Bonga suggested, you can help us to move South Africa forward in a better way. Can we leave the matter there and say we have laid a very good foundation for engagement? Honorable Maya?
I think there's nothing, there's something which needs to be clarified. As the most honored Ngibe say, there is nothing, we are trying to make a law of something which was never criminal. But the reason why we are having an amendment bill is because there's an act in place which criminalizes this activity. The reason why we're engaging in this process is because we want to correct that. I just wanted to clarify that.
It's in line with the position that you are advocating. So we,
which act is that?
Because if you do an amendment, you are amending something that exists. Bring us the act, and then we take it from there.
Yes, we made a mistake by making it a criminal in the terms of the Federal Offences Act, which we made it a criminal even kissing and so on. The children kiss each other and touch, and there are so many other things. Now we're trying, and then if this act was challenged in the Constitutional Court as being criminalizing sex amongst the consenting young children. So what the Constitutional Court is saying is that don't make it a criminal. And what Mr. Kiva and others are saying, don't make it a criminal. So we agree that it shouldn't be a criminal offense. This is what they're saying. So this is what is being corrected. But if it is in the bill that you see something that perhaps may give to the ordinary people a wrong impression, you can advise as to how we should do it. Or we may say that in removing that, the bill must say that this matter be taken and enforce the parents or enforce the traditional leaders to take that measure. Thank you.
No, I think, like I said earlier, we are just agreeing with the controllers, but all I'm seeing is positive, is that we need to engage very close with them, to close the, we can close a lot of gaps, but I see a lot of opportunity for Parliament to can achieve certain societal problems together with controllers, because they themselves are a value-based organization, and highly cultural. So there are a lot of things that we can achieve together with them. And I think we are generally agreeing with them that we're just criminalizing this thing. The role of parent must be maximized, and the role of traditional leadership must be maximized. And let's develop programs of ensuring that we grow our societies. And with them, I think we can really move South Africa forward in a more faster way. Thanks.
Do you have some concluding remarks? If the question about virginity kissing was that to be, whether that should be responded to at all, but the interesting issue is when we deal with ages, the Honourable Bilani Mujaki raised that issue of virginity testing. Yes, there are abuses that take place, but we know the age is 16 for that. That's 16. Below the age of 16, no child can agree to virginity testing. So there's not even a permission for that. But at the same time, a child can have an abortion at the age of 10 years of age without the parents even knowing. So we've got contradictions when we look at ages, and I'm sure the Controleza could assist us in looking at these issues from a traditional perspective. Because similarly, as Ms. Dani Majaka argued, that a child should maybe not be able to expose themselves to those practices of fertility testing. Similarly, other issues of contraception to children, abortion to children without the parent even knowing about it, are issues that we as a society are grappling with as well. But just on the central issue, I think Mr. Bonga has correctly said, we have a clear understanding that you also do appreciate the difficulties of criminalizing the sex of 12 to 16, and we need to empower the traditional methods that you use. And that's what we're saying broader. Families, society need to deal with the issue and maybe not the criminal justice sector, as the Buddha said. So gee, I think that's basically in agreement. Thank you.
Maybe you should take the message that Sponsoreza should help in the fight against patriarchy and give more role to women, because these challenges can be actually be resolved faster if women have an active role to play.
Thank you, Chairperson. Well, I think it's only a misrepresentation of patriarchy that creates the confusion in society, because women always have a leading role in our communities and play a very crucial role for that matter. They are the managing directors of each and every family. So there's no question. We don't need to define ourselves according to others, but according to the way we know it. But I don't think, Chairperson, let's talk about the issue of virginity testing today. It is not an item on the agenda. It will take us another day to deal with. I think the issue was mentioned in passing. I think we were here for this, and therefore I will not even take time to respond to the issue of virginity testing. We just want to express our gratitude, Chairperson, first and foremost, to an organization for having been invited here to present our views as an organization. We take this serious because we are always concerned when certain pieces of legislation are looked at without stressing our view, because we believe that there shouldn't be a law that resonates with our constituency, with our people, that must go to without confidential being called here to express itself and to express its own opinions. And therefore, the leadership of Kozalesa, from our president, he has said that we must say we are grateful at this, and we think that it should continue. It should not only end with this one. From time to time, Kozalesa wishes to work with you as the parliament, and that's why, particularly this day, we are so grateful at the constructive questions that have been raised here and inputs. We really want to take this back to the NEC of Kozalesa, and fortunately, I think, as you say, Chair, on this matter, we seem to be seeing in the same direction, that there is no point to criminalize. And in that spirit, Chairperson, thank you for allowing me to be the last person to speak here. I will tell the traditional leaders that you still employ and uphold African traditions here. Thank you very much. Let me just say that don't wait for us to invite you. If there are critical issues, you can send a submission to the office, the chair, to the committee secretary. We want a dynamic relationship with yourselves. Thank you very much. The General Secretary of National Interfaith Council of South Africa. I think you are well positioned there. Or you can sit beside, come and sit over here, Reverend Lambo. Honorable members are interrupting me and their subjects, so I can't ignore them. They are suggesting that we must have a tea break, and I guess they are speaking for all of you. Can we go and fetch the tea and come back? Is that fine? Okay.
Can you ask everybody to come in, please?
Okay. Reverend Bambu, the floor is yours.
Thank you, Chairman, for this opportunity. Honorable members of the Portfolio Committee, members of Contralesa in absentia, and the NPA who are present, support staff from Parliament, and all those who are here with us on this day. I come from an organization that is called the National Interfaith Council of South Africa, which is the and the council that represents all people of faith in this country. We do not restrict them, that's why we don't call ourselves a religious council. We call ourselves interfaith because there's a difference. In terms of religions that are recognized in this country, there are 7 in number. We don't know who decided that there should only be 7 religions that are recognized, because we've got more people of faith who don't actually understand that there are 7 religions. So, hence, when we all agreed, we used the concept interfaith instead of interreligious. So, that's just the prologue of my presentation. When we were asked to make a comment on this amendment bill, we gave ourselves time. Now, you know that religious leaders are in actual fact people who are sometimes difficult and inaccessible. And talking about sex, the concept itself, is like taboo. So, debating the issue was also very difficult because people want to avoid issues of this nature. However, the challenge was standing before us. There's been an outcry throughout history that we were not consulted when many bills were presented. We could quote a few. When the bill that people still trying to reverse and debate about abortion was discussed, we feel that we were not thoroughly consulted. And hence, when this issue came up and we were consulted, we felt honored, and we then decided that no, we must do our state work and be able to get responses. Now, I'm not representing my views, nor am I representing the views of a religion that I belong to. I'm presenting to you a view that comes generally from people of interface, communities of interface, who have, of course, differences, but we have to structure some compromises along the way. Others at all don't want to entertain the matter. It's not even an issue to them. It is just taboo, and it cannot be discussed. But the reality that we are faced with is that we live in a society that is dynamic, that is changing, where there are institutions that we have to interact with. Let me start by saying that ICSA is an interfaith movement representing groups of various belief systems. Made these observations on this matter the following. That as religious or people of faith, we are regarded as custodians of morality and ethics in society. And whatever happens around these issues becomes of our primary concern. But we have learned our own lessons in the process. And all of you will know that if you go to a mosque, if you're a Muslim, they have a code, and it's called commandments, there are 10. They read them from time to time. You go to Christians, they do the same. You go to the Jews, they do the same. Other religions have similar codes where they speak about issues of morality. But in spite of all these things, lessons that we learn is that even if you teach these things, but society will keep on, not just, will go to these institutions, but they have their own practices and beliefs outside these institutions. And some of the things that we are in denial of, we had a long debate, in particular with the leadership of the Roman Catholic Church, because as you have alluded to Chairperson from the beginning, I think there's a misconception and an understanding of what the intention of this bill was about. And partly our response was also based on the ignorance of why this bill is supposed to be discussed. To others, it was like the question of age is the major. But we realized along the way that it is not about age so much. It was about a question of discrimination, which is primary. Our position is, you know that we live in a society where moral decay and moral degeneration is very high. And we know that partly psychologically this was created by the system that we used to live under. I know that today many people won't deny that there was apartheid. But we all acknowledge that there was apartheid, and apartheid disrupted societies, it disrupted communities, it disrupted families. It caused all the social ills that today we are living under. And we understand the process and the reasons why there must be amendment of certain legislations. As interface movement, we are guided by certain moral and ethical codes. To believers, consensual sex remains a code for married people. We don't compromise. Sex outside marriage is a sin. We, however, recognize that societies and cultures evolve, and new practices and influences are part of this process. This is an acknowledgement also. Because whether we like it or not, we might try to stick to the basic things that we believe in. Intentions, children come there and learn, we baptize their children, we become happy, the membership is growing high. We don't ask, where did you get these children? Because at least we know the numbers are increasing. But our belief says to us, we are not supposed to even acknowledge, it's just a sin. But a child once is born is no longer a sinner. He never brought himself into this world. To ask the age of consenting person to have sex should be 18 years. Now, the gentleman indicated that the Catholics are saying don't even put age. They stick to marriage, not age. But to others, they were saying, of course, let's define that as being 18 years as a person who can consent to have sex. Others were saying 16 years, but generally speaking, all of us were in agreement that because we read the entire bill, we did not read only 15 and 16. We decided to take the bill and read it in its totality. But what we missed in the process is that in actual fact, we were looking at the criminal part of the bill and not looking at the purpose of why the bill itself. And hence we in our comments, some of them, we realized, and I'm happy that it's better when you are here and getting it from other people so that you are able to clarify issues. Our understanding was that, based on ignorance also, that is government trying to reduce the age of sexual consent? And that's how people were interpreting it. And hence this objection that were coming, that no, we can't allow that. To us, any person who is under that age of consent, who engages in sex, it's a criminal act. And there's no negotiation about it. That person must follow the course of the law. Now, when we looked at this act and the Immorality Act, which supersedes it before, of 1957, we were interpreting it along those lines, that when it was amended in 2007, we were comfortable with the 2007 amendment of the Act itself, the Sexual Offences and Related Matters Act, criminal law. But now, as we are engaging, we have made our comments and then agreed to some of the amendments that are proposed. about younger people who engage in sexual acts in terms of the recommendations that are coming and the amendments that are being proposed. But in general, to cut the whole story short, in general, Chairperson, our view is that with the amendments that are being proposed, one is that on Act number 16, Section 16 of Act, number 32 of 2007, we want to concur. And then with the rest of the other acts, if probably people have the presentation that we are making, they will see they are too long. I'm not going to go through all of them. But primarily, we were saying that the DPP must have the authority to decide in certain matters on whether to prosecute or not to prosecute on certain acts. But generally speaking, after our engagement, we share the same view now. And I don't think that, contrary to what we were thinking, anybody would be for that. The intention was never to try and get engaged in the issue of consensuality of speech around sex. And our understanding then was, will actually be that we will support the bill. As long as the bill was not intended, because the misunderstanding and misconception was that we understood the bill to be suggesting that we should recognize children who are underage, or we are trying to encourage children who are underage to get involved in sexual acts. And if that is not that was not the intention, with the understanding now that we have, we are of the view that we will support this bill. We made our comments on here. That we will respect the ruling that was made by Constitutional Court, and as law-abiding citizens, we will support the Constitution of the Republic and will abide by it. Just as a way of proposing a way forward, Chairperson, I think what we need from our side is that we should go and clarify this letter. There must be public education. We are prepared to partner with Parliament to go and clarify this letter. Because the advantage with our constituents, you don't have to call a meeting, we don't have to correct, because it is there. People don't come because they are invited, they go there voluntarily. We will offer ourselves as people who go and communicate the message, because the truth of the matter is, the message and the way it was communicated, it was misunderstood. And we would like to assist in terms of clarifying the purpose of this bill. It is misunderstood and it feels like that people don't understand what is ruling or what this portfolio committee was supposed to do. So that's our submission.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. I welcome this presentation. I think it is a progressive presentation from, and but still the same comment, Chair, that we want to find a way that we have a situation where there are many voices, but the message must be one in terms of dealing with this matter, because if we were to have Controlesa, we have NICSA, you have all these other organizations that have presented, partnering in terms of ensuring that the voices are main, but the message is one, would effectively find a way of also and find a message to the adolescents in terms of saying that sex is wrong, but when it is occurred, we need to deal with it differently than to say they must face the criminal justice system. So I think that's it with this presentation. Thanks.
Thank you, Shepherd. And I also want to welcome the presentation and to say to Reverend that this is a step forward for us, because we've had a lot of religious groups coming in. And I'm sure a lot of them are actually having the same kind of interpretation, that we are legalizing sex between minors. And what is actually encouraging is to find it more and more as people come here, organizations come here, there is that clarity, that the intention of the bill that we're looking into, in accordance with the order of the Constitutional Court, is really to avoid criminalizing children who may at some point experiment with sex. Thank you very much, Chair.
No, Chair, I also welcome the submission. The challenge is, of course, to explain to the public the difference between the term of decriminalization and legalization. And most lay people would not understand it. And so it's very important that Mr. Bonga has said, Advocate Bonga, that we need to send out the message that we from Parliament are still saying that sex for adolescents is wrong. It's not being encouraged. But people will not understand that subtle difference that what decriminalization means. And I remember discussions at the beginning when we were engaging in this issue from the word go, even some MPs were saying, well, what does decriminalization mean? Does it mean that you cannot engage in that? I don't have a clear answer myself, legally speaking, as a lawyer. But I do understand that criminalization has not helped with it. So we need to be very careful how we speak in public about these issues, and I myself was guilty of perhaps marketing an incorrect message. We do not want to send children to jail for engaging in consensual sex. We want to strengthen families. We want to strengthen faith-based groups, NGOs, in dealing with the challenges that are faced. But I think what really struck me was the young lady in the Jules case that she committed suicide. And it's a heavy responsibility on us and myself as a legislator that passed the original act. To understand, there was a young girl that engaged in consensual sex, was arrested, went through the process, a very traumatic experience that she couldn't deal with eventually, and committed suicide as a result of engaging in consensual sex. So these are some of the issues that we grapple with, that we pretty much make it very clear that the age of consent is 16. And I think once we all understand that, the consequences of adolescents engaging in sex is that they will not be charged. Doesn't mean that we are saying they should engage in that act. But thank you for your input. I appreciate it.
Now, one thing with lawyers is if you put two lawyers in the same room or put 100 of them in the same room, you may get 100 opinions. And now you will have the difficulty of knowing which of these lawyers is right. So I agree with the Honorable Swart that lawyers have different understanding. And myself as a lawyer, my understanding, which is nobody other lawyer perhaps would share, would be that do not enforce moral laws through the criminal justice system, or don't reduce moral laws to criminal laws. So decriminalize these things. Honorable Chabalala, I see you have just arrived and still trying to deal with the breakfast issues. You want to make your wisdom known?
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I hope you did receive my apology while I was late. I think while I welcome the presentation, for me, we still should acknowledge that the less gray area of this matter, and perhaps we will deal with it as a committee, is that while it protects young people in terms of them not being criminalized in terms of consensual sex, it's still a gray area if it is rape. Because if we say they can give consent at that age, it would mean in a rape case, that child must now defend themselves like I would defend myself to prove that I did say no. And the rape case is big and very difficult for a female my age. Now I want to imagine a 12-year-old facing a 35-year-old, or in fact, let me bring it down, facing another 14 or 16-year-old who might happen to have more experience than him, that they would be able to stand in a court of law and say, you know, I did not consent. So for me, while it is good what we are doing, we should do it, I understand why, and I have made a change, like what I was saying, since we started dealing with this, but I'm still worried about saying they have an ability to say yes or no, because it's, in a rape case, it becomes very difficult for that child to prove that I did not consent.
I think some of the things which we said about controversial apply to yourself. Now, those of us who belong to more than one church, when we visit these many churches that we believe in, you find that the majority of people are women. I think women have the capacity to deal with the challenges we face. So if NITRA and ContraLESA and others could actually participate in MRM, Moral Regeneration Movement, and make sure that that structure is transformed, is representative, and more women play a role there, we wouldn't be sitting here and seeking solutions. You see, also, Department of Justice and Correctional Services deal with offenses which have already been committed. But the Department of Social Development, Department of Arts and Culture, would have programs which would prevent some of this. So maybe we need, as someone proposed, a public education. Who was saying public education? Yes, Mr. Mbambu. I think maybe if a workshop could be convened of all the stakeholders with government departments, we should have some money to host those things, discuss and come up with a program of that public education, societal education, so that we begin to address these things and meet them in a part. So I think that can assist, and I think that we should provide leadership in this matter, because we can only make laws and attach penalties, but you can educate us and take us forward. I think, Honorable Bonga, we should talk of this matter with those leaders.
Yeah, thanks. I think just to correct something which Honorable Shabalala just spoke about, the issue of the that before us, the issue of the adolescent versus adolescent. In the event an elder person gets into a sexual intercourse with the adolescent, that is a statutory rape. So it may be clear that we move from the same level of information in terms of that. Because that is why I'm saying we need to be in many voices. We need many voices with one message. That one is also dealt in terms of another piece of legislation, not this particular legislation. So I think I need to just clarify that, Honorable Chair, through you.
I'm saying that I once thought like Honorable Shalala. I was prepared for it later. But she was not here when we addressed the issues. But I'll give her an opportunity to throw the light on that. And thank you for that observation, Honorable Boga.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I did correct it. It still remains that 12-year-old facing a 16-year-old, it would, or 14-year-old, or 15-year-old, he would still have to prove that I said no. because when we decriminalize, we are saying consensual sex is okay. We are I understand the message is we are saying it's wrong, but we are saying what has happened, we are not criminalizing. So by default, we are saying there is a right to consent. So it means that a rape case of a 20-year-old and a 16-year-old who might be more experienced in sex might even have committed crime by then, having a criminal mind, and you find the 12-year-old to whom it was the first time sexual experience, loss of virginity, she would still have to stand there and say, I did not consent, and prove that non-consensuality. So that's the gray area I was saying, that remains the gray area.
In our presenters would understand we are a multi-party committee. Our strength is that we have different views, and we debate until we reach consensus. So this is still work in progress. So down the line, we have no doubt that we will reach consensus. Can we close the matter, Honorable Boga? Can we close the matter at that point?
We can close, sir.
Our understanding is that we need society to play its role, to take responsibility. We cannot solve the problems of children through criminal sanctions. That would be destroying rather than helping children and society. So the decision of the Constitutional Court is moving us in the right direction. Can we excuse on Mr. Mbambo, Reverend Mbambo, and ask the advocate present? Advocate, I don't want to mispronounce her name, but
PC or Pisi PC.
Okay, over to you. Come near, please. Honorable Breidenbach, I hope you're not walking out.
Thank you very much. Thank you. As you said, I'm Bronwyn Sidney. I'm an advocate in the National Prosecuting Authority, and together with me is my colleague, Advocate Capello, who's from the National Office of the National Prosecuting Authority. Firstly, we'd like to thank the committee for inviting us to present today. We welcome the opportunity to do so. We have obviously had the privilege of being able to follow the committee hearings and obviously seen the bill. And it's actually at a very opportune moment that we can come in and give our input. For those of you who, well, I'm assuming that the committee is aware of there were three issues that were raised to the NPA, which you would like input on, but obviously if there are questions outside of the ambit of our presentation, we would be happy to assist if we can. So if I may just mention the three areas which we were requested to give you comment on. The first one was the impact on the criminalisation of sexual conduct between 12 and 16 years old has been. So that is in terms of the act as it currently stands as opposed to the bill, the effectiveness of such prosecutions as deterrent. The second issue was the challenges experienced in relation to the management of the National Register and the registering of child sex offenders in particular. And then a third, more general question is our views on the amendments affecting our operations, the amendments 215 and 16. I'm going to try to be shorter rather than longer, so I won't actually read out the submission, but maybe try and summarise it, and if people would like to meet you, examine any of the facts that I, or the points that I raised, then I'll do so with pleasure. So maybe just also take a step back in terms of the previous Act, the 1957 legislation. Both in that legislation, which is Section 14, and the current legislation, which deals with 15 and 16, the NPA actually instituted very few prosecutions. And it was indicated in the Teddy Bear Clinic that, in fact, there were only two or three cases that we have taken forward, and as Honourable Member Scott has raised, and I know that it was discussed in a previous committee hearing, that the consequences of these prosecutions can be very, very dire. We acknowledge that in terms of proceeding with the prosecution, which would include a diversion program, by the time that happens, the child has already been exposed to the criminal justice system. And that is obviously a concern that this committee has acknowledged or expressed, and it's a concern that I think most people within the criminal justice system and those advocating the rights of children legitimately have. What I'm not going to go into detail of, but I think it might be of some use to you, is that what we have submitted are some statistics in relation to two areas, which just for clarity. First of all, they are only statistics of cases that are reported to our Tutor Zeta Care Centres, because we do not have detail of these types of cases generally in the NPA. And the Tutor Zeta cases represent about half of the number of sexual offences that are reported every year. So the stats that we've given you are very important to know, that this is not full complement of stats, of statistics of reported cases of all sexual offences, including sections 15 and 16. The second thing is that the stats that we've presented to you have only been in the last 10 months and do not include Section 15 and 16 cases that we would prosecute against children because of the moratorium. But the reason we've put this in is to indicate how few cases, even when the accused is an adult, that we actually take forward. And the point that we're trying to make is that there are many other ways of resolving these cases rather than instituting a prosecution. So I think it's just to clarify, because I think sometimes that can be a little bit confusing, and also in the way that we presented that there are a lot of numbers. But what we really wanted to emphasize is that there are other means in which to deal with these cases. Even when we have an adult involved with a child between the ages of 12 and 16. That's not to say that we don't prosecute. You will see that there have been a number of cases that we have prosecuted in the last year. So they're just a small percentage, but they do exist. So in terms of the question whether we experience as a deterrent, we need to say very clearly this is not based on research. This is based on the experience that we have in our courts. And what we know over the many, many years that we have had those sections in place, so let's say before the Teddy Bear Clinic, Section 15 and 16 and Section 14 in terms of the previous legislation, is that having those pieces of legislation, the criminalisation, it does not work to deter children from having sex at those ages. And my personal input here in the sense that if criminalisation doesn't work, perhaps we need to find another route of dealing with children who are in sex between those ages. So the practicality is that if those cases are brought to us as the National Prosecuting Authority, most of the time we're declined to prosecute, so what we call non-prosecute. So the cases are either withdrawn by the South African Police Services, or we tried not to prosecute at the time when the doctors brought to us. As I said before, by that stage the child has already been exposed to the criminal justice system, and I think as the Constitutional Court has very clearly indicated, and I think that this committee acknowledges, that is not the ideal situation. Then the second question was the challenges experienced in relation to the National Register. Just to put on record, the National Register, the custodian of the National Register is that of the Department of Justice and not of the National Prosecuting Authority. The legislation in Chapter 6 of the Act does not require any, or does not have any legal, doesn't place any legal obligation on the NPA to perform in terms of the register, other than to, if an order is not made by the court, that an accused must be entered in the register in terms of a particular situation or against children and those mentally disabled people, then the obligation does rest on the NPA to raise the matter with the court. But that is what it is limited to. Although we weren't specifically asked to address this, we do welcome the opportunity to address the committee on the issue of the legal procedure proposed in Section 7 of the bill. After much consideration, at the way that it stands at the moment, the onus, for lack of a better word, rests on the accused to show why he or she shouldn't be entered into the register. We're of the position that actually that should be shifted onto the state, and that if the state wants to have the details of an accused entered into the register, the onus would rest on the procedural process would have to be instituted by the NPA. I think that has been proposed by a number of submissions, and we would welcome that. I'm happy to go into the process of some of the things that we've been thinking about, but it would probably be in the form of an application, and that the NPA would need evidence around that. Again, I don't know whether the detail is really necessary at the moment, but some of the things that we're thinking about is that it could be covered in a pre-sentence report. I know there have been questions about the qualifications of people who would be able to do this, but probation officers and social workers within the state are required to provide pre-sentence reports at this stage already before any accused is sentenced. And those people are meant to provide information as including issues of reoffending and the appropriateness of certain sentences. So I think at this stage, I know that there are queries around the type of qualifications that people need. They also just raised, I think it was also raised concerns in the committee, that if we compare the issue of this to the establishments or evaluations that are done in Section 11.3 of the Child Justice Act around the criminal capacity, the establishment of criminal, or the assessment around criminal capacity of a child between 10 and 14, we have experienced immense practical problems with that in terms of the expertise required. And even when psychiatrists and psychologists have provided the courts with evaluations, the courts are still backing to actually come down clearly whether the child has criminal capacity or not. So I think that's just a practical thing that we might need to have a close look at. Then the third issue was the views of the amendments. Basically, I mean, in general, other than the couple of issues that I've raised here around the register, we are in agreement with the amendments. I'd just like to address myself briefly to the delegation of the decisions in terms of Section 15.2 and 16.2. I know that there have been concerns about some submissions that they would want the decision to rest with the DPP and not for it to be delegated. The question that I would ask at this stage is, at what stage does one, or at what, not only in terms of this legislation, not only in terms of these offences, how are we differentiating between all offences, all crimes that are committed that are referred to the DPP or not referred to the DPP? At the moment, cases that are referred to the DPP are contained, guidelines are contained in our directors, not sexual offence directors only, but our general NPA directors. And those directors indicate certain categories of offences, and a lot of them involve child murders, child rape in certain provinces that use, but often child rapes that involve violence, trafficking cases, things like that. And the concern is that are we then going to refer all of the cases that involve children, not only sexual offences? What would differentiate between a child between 16 and 17, or any child really? Shouldn't we refer all of those matters then to the DPP if this kind of thinking is continued? And I think that's the concern. At the moment, all of the decisions in terms of referral to the DPP for decision are going to be contained in our directors, and we would argue that continues to be contained in our directors. And then it would be an internal issue around making that decision. I think I covered most of the things in the submission, and obviously I open. I don't know if my colleague would like to add anything.
In the one of the African languages, even people have said everything that Mavic said. You say, in other words, I agree. Don't just keep quiet.
I agree with my colleague at the stage. Thanks. At least then.
Okay,
I'm grateful to the MPA for giving some clarity that we're actually dealing with very few amount of prosecutions when it comes to this issue. What I would like to just ask, and one of the sad issues of the history of this whole matter was where it was became known as the Kissing Bill. And that, regrettably, yes, we made mistakes, but it was a real undermining of the good intentions and the progressive nature of the whole bill. Obviously, from the prosecutor's side, you would never prosecute a person for kissing or hugging, as you know, Damon was known to write less. So that's just as an aside. What I would like to ask you, we just briefly discussed whether you looked into the issue of competent verdict arising from the proposed amendments. We appreciate the fact that we are bound by a constitutional court order, but is there any implications for competent verdicts? If you look at the act itself, and you might want to come back to us on this because it's not something you prepared on, but item 13 of the schedule deals with competent verdicts. And then the issue raised by Ms. Itfield Dabalala, the issue of consent, and I know Waterhouse is here as well, who feels very strongly that you can't use this act, which criminalizes an issue, to bring an issue of consent in. But it is, my view is still that it is, a practical example, a 12-year-old lays a rape charge against a 16-year-old. 16-year-old says she consented. At the moment, it's criminalized, so she can't give consent. Now, the young girl, from a practical perspective, has to go to court. And the onus is on the state. In the Vilakazi case, that said the onus is on the state to prove that consent was not given. And that often is the reason why many rape cases aren't brought to court, because of the secondary trauma of rape victims. Would you agree that that is a consequence of the decision that we just got to live with, the fact that decriminalization results in indirect consent now having to be disproved in rape cases? Do you understand the evidence issue I'm relating to? Maybe, let me just put it again. 12-year-old is raped. She lays a rape charge against the 16-year-old. The 16-year-old says, you consented. As the bill, as before the act, before the court case, it was criminalized, so she couldn't give consent. Now, as an indirect result, she has to go to court to disprove the fact. And this is a consequence, and I know there are the NGOs still very strongly that we can't use criminalization to assist a victim in those circumstances. The second issue is the other side of the coin that the Women's Legal Center brought in the same situation where the 12-year-old lays a rape charge, the consent is not proved, and she's then, or the lack of consent from her side is not proved. She can now be charged for engaging in consensual sex before the court case. So it cuts both ways. Although I would think it's very unlikely that in that case a person would be charged where you lay a rape charge and your consent was disproved, that then you'd be charged for engaging in consensual sex. But those are some of the implications. But I think we pretty much as a committee appreciate those issues that you've got to just live with as an MPA. I would also like you to touch on the issue of social development intervention. You alluded to it, that in such cases maybe that's the avenue, not to use the criminal law, and we obviously are not going to be able to because of the constitutional court's ruling, but could one not have a referral to a children's inquiry such as they have in foreign jurisdictions, Scotland for example? Many countries have got criminalization of consensual sex for teenagers, but they refer it to social intervention. They use criminal inquiries, a child commission, so they use it in that regard. So it is interesting to, we begin with the fact about the court has said that. But it is interesting in many jurisdictions, adolescent consensual sex is criminalized, but they deal with it through social development interventions. Thank you, Chair.
Both of you, you can express your opinions. You don't have to speak on behalf of the MPA. So someone may go and quote you and say the MPA says this is how you have it. So let's hear your opinions on the matter.
So, but I just need to make sure that I do understand you. So let me first deal with the Compton verdict issue. And maybe I'm stating the obvious. In any case of rape, where we have a charge of rape, we have to prove beyond reasonable doubt all of the elements of the crime, and one of them is we have to prove lack of consent. So in your example of 12 and a 16-year-old, 12-year-old accuses of rape, sorry, accuses a 16-year-old of rape. State has to prove the consent. We don't prove the consent. Not guilty. In the past, well, let's say as the current act stands, we have a competent verdict for Section 15. Okay. Very often, the element, okay, so in order for Section 15 to be proved, we would have, as a competent verdict, the facts would have to support Section 15. So in other words, sexual intercourse would have to, sexual penetration, excuse me, would have to be proved, etc. At that stage, If in the trial the complainant concedes that it was consensual, let's just deal with that scenario, concedes that it was consensual, not that they don't prove it, but actually concedes that it was consensual, she's self-incriminating herself, and the possibility exists that we then go ahead and charge her for the offence. First of all, I mean, that's one of the things that we don't want. Okay. The second one being that if we don't prove lack of consent, but she doesn't concede that it was consensual, at the moment we're sitting with a situation of a competent verdict, if we take that away, what we have not been able to do is prove our case. And I'm not so sure that what we're looking for is a way through, exactly like I say, the back door, to actually criminalise the case. We're catching it because we still haven't proved our case. If we wanted to... Now, if we wanted to prosecute in terms of Section 15, obviously we would go ahead and do that, and we would criminalise both. But maybe this is where I'm not kind of understanding you. If we haven't, if it isn't an offence, why would we want a competent verdict of an offence that we haven't proved?
Clarify here, if I may. On that scenario that you said, where she actually gave consent, but she's lying in court, absolutely. But in other cases, the Villacard case, for example, the court there said because she didn't express no, she didn't express herself strongly enough. She was an 11-year-old in that case, which put a whole different scenario. But say it was a 12-year-old where she just, where you are unable to disprove the issue of, or prove that she did not give consent on her age or whatever. Purely that it's a rape, straightforward, consider it a rape case, there's violence used in that, but the issue of consent is the critical issue that for whatever reason she can't say this or prove to court. So you fall back on the other elements, and then the competent verdict would be Section 15 or indecent assault or the competent verdict set out. And so purely on the issue of the fact that you as the prosecutor cannot, in the leading of the evidence of the victim, prove that she did not give consent. And I'm not saying where she lied. I'm just saying purely because of the trauma involved or something, you will not be able to now fall back on a competent verdict. And that is a consequence that I would see, but it might be, you could say, but see, it never happens. It's just not something that is practical, you know.
And I show you that although Honorable Sartre is an attorney, he's not trying to prepare a case that is going to come before you.
Okay, maybe I can respond to that. I understand that we're talking about a scenario where we have, on paper, we have a straight rape, and there is no consent involved. We don't prove consent. If Section 15 is a competent verdict, effectively what we're conceding is that she did consent. And I think that in and of itself is problematic. Because then we are, to a large extent, we're criminalising her, even though maybe the section exists. But the other thing that concerns me is that if we're saying we can't prove the elements of rape, and that it was consensual, then why, I mean, it may sound like quite absurd, but why don't we extend that situation to all ages of complainants? We could get an absurd situation where we just go the whole way, that if we can't prove rape, then we get what would be equivalent would be of a consensual prosecution. And just because we're talking about someone between 12 and 16, why do we allow for that exception as opposed to a 20-year-old?
That would apply. I'm sorry to engage this, but it's very important for me to understand this concept. A 20-year-old and a 13-year-old, that would apply. Because you would fall back on statutory rape. You'd fall back on section 15. A 13-year-old, the data charge of rape against a 20-year-old. You understand? And the issue of consent falls by the wayside. You fall back on statutory rape. She can't give consent. 16, below 16. On the adult child situation. And that's your view of it. And that is, when we drafted the bill, that's the basis to protect victims of sexual offences. Your fallback position, if you've got a child, is to fall back on statutory rape, where it's not rape. You can at least get a verdict of statutory rape where you can't disprove the issue of consent. But, see, I don't want to engage too much. We can chat in the corridor, I think, as well.
You are enriching the debate, but they're also entitled to say now they will sleep over the matter.
I want to speak on the issue of social development interactions that you have raised. I do think that the whole purpose of the Child Justice Act is actually to address what you are asking, because the main purpose of the Act is to say that when we have children that have committed offences, use diversion, meaning that divert them away from the criminal justice system. But then with the Child Justice, there are requirements that need to be met. Now, what happens when the child does not meet those requirements that the child can be taken to diversion? One of the requirements is to say that a child needs to acknowledge that indeed I have done wrong here. But then what if the child does not actually acknowledge the wrong that they have done? What is it that the Child Justice Act says? It moves on to say that if you do not acknowledge the acts of wrongfulness that we have done, we will proceed now with our normal court processes. But again, that same piece of legislation says that if a child is convicted and sentenced for that particular offense, a sentence can be clearly to actually utilize the diversion options. And again, one will ask and one will say that if now a child has been convicted and sentenced, that is actually frustrating the whole purpose of diversion, which says that we don't want children to have criminal record and so forth. But the same piece of legislation has a provision to say that the records of that particular child who has been convicted and sentenced can be expunged after a certain point of time. So I do think that the social development interventions that we're talking about are actually catered for in the Child Justice Act, and as you move with the provisions of the Child Justice Act, they give you that leeway to say that at the end, a child is given an opportunity in life to acknowledge their wrong and be accountable.
Sorry, if I could just mention that, just add to that, I understand what you're talking about in terms of foreign jurisdictions have done something like this. I think the problem with criminalizing it in the sense that, you know, that's a criminal justice process, but it's referred to DSD or social development or certain interventions. What it's still saying is that sexual conduct between 12 and 16 is wrong. And but my understanding, and maybe this is incorrect, my understanding is that part of what the Constitutional Court said and what some of the submissions have said is that it's part of a natural growing up process. If we're saying that it's problematic in the sense that there needs to be some interventions, what we certainly could look at, and I spoke about that, Jay, is that you can refer children to the Children's Court for a Children's Court inquiry, and that they are processes of referring children to DSD for certain interventions, as my colleague mentions, in terms of the Children's Act. So I'm not comfortable with saying, because it's kind of a halfway thing, that you are criminally liable, but we're not going to send you through the criminal justice system, we're just going to make sure that you go to some other, so it's push programs. And I'm not sure that the criminal law should be the avenue to be doing that. You know, there may be another mechanism in which one could say.
You see, our questions show that we need this new insight. We are reading old books here. So don't just prosecute us. You must also write books, write articles, so that we are updated. But your contributions are very
good. The United Advocate Pussy wrote the commentary on the section on the criminal. Look at Pussy. She wrote, go look in the library, you'll see the whole section on this is written by her. So we can be very proud of our NPA.
I think you must encourage others to write. We need fresh ideas. Textbooks are updated. Can we, is there any that can read the message? Honorable Lai Chalala.
Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think. Thank you, Honorable Chair. I think I would like to hear the opinion of the NPA. Maybe you spoke, but maybe you spoke in codes. Lawyers talk like this. So, in layman's terms, I'm still concerned and I'm not getting a clear answer. Look, the Act before was very clear. There was no consensual sex between those ages. So, I didn't have to prove anything if I say I'm right. You know, it's I could not have consented, so I was protected. Now that we are decriminalizing it, does it then mean where a 12-year-old or 13-year-old, or even 14-year-old says, I didn't consent to this, the 16-year-old raped me, is that case then treated in the normal way that you treat a rape case? She must stand up against that the perpetrator, or so-called perpetrator, because they are guilty until they are proven, they are innocent until they are proven guilty. They must stand face-to-face in court, and she must say a 12, first-time sexual experience, loss of virginity, and say, the 16-year-old raped me, I did not consent. Is that the ramification of what would happen? That's what I'm trying to find out.
I don't think, well, in fact, it's not a ramification of changing the legislation. At the moment, if a 12-year-old alleges that a 16-year-old has raped her, then we would proceed with a rape case. The charge would be a rape. It wouldn't be, as the legislation stands now, a Section 15 offence. We would charge on rape. And like any other rape case, given the way that our system works, that 12-year-old would have to come to court and testify. Whether it was a 3-year-old, whether it was a 10-year-old, whether it was a 12-year-old, whether it was a 25-year-old, 60-year-old, that complainant would have to come and testify, and we would, through that testimony, have to prove our elements of rape. And that is just the way the system works. I mean, whether that's a good way, a good system or not a good system, it's another debate. I think what Mr. Todd is concerned about, and maybe I shouldn't be asking this again, but in the situation where you have your 12-year-old, that we cannot prove that that 12-year-old didn't consent, it's a legal onus that we have, then there will be an acquittal. There will be acquittal on a charge of rape, just as if a 5-year-old, in the case of a 3-year-old, but a 5-year-old, a 10-year-old, 18-year-old, 30-year-old. If we can't prove our case, we're going to get an acquittal. And the reality is that however old that complainant is, if it's a charge of rape, that person will have to come and testify, using hopefully all of our protective mechanisms, etc. But that's not a consequence of this legislation. The consequence of this legislation is where you have a 16-year-old and a 12-year-old who are engaging in consensual sexual behavior. That is no longer criminalized in terms of the bill. That's the consequence. Any other, if it is a rape, there is no consent, we charge with rape.
Very well. The ball is now a court. So let's leave the matter there. Is the Department of Social Development here? You see, these matters don't want us to work in silos. We must hear one another and find a collective solution, because otherwise we will agree here. The other parties are not here, and then we'll keep on having problems. Department of Basic Education, yeah, do you want to address us? Yeah, thank you, Ms. Penny and Ms. Katana. You've done very well. I want to see another article that you write in the book. you can follow up with the Department of Social Development. We want to hear them on these matters that are before us.
I do apologize for my voice. How do you want to speak? It will not take that long to go through the couple of slides that I've got. In terms of the three areas we have to respond to, I have got the following. The first one is the prevalence of sexual conduct amongst children in the targeted age group. In terms of data, the department does not have such current statistics on the prevalence of sexual conduct amongst children between the ages of 12 and 15. Although there are school-based incident reporting registers at all schools, the issue of reporting is a major concern for the department, and that's not only around the sexual activity that's going on amongst children, but it's also violence amongst children. And what the department has done to try and alleviate this problem is that we have populated South African school administration and management system, which is called DSA SANS, and the learner unit tracking system has been introduced to schools to counter all forms of violence against children. In terms of what the department's role is in providing guidance around sexual health and development, the approach that the department has adopted is that of the promotion of human rights as enshrined within the Constitution. The curriculum is underpinned by the human rights approach, which includes gender-based violence and sexual offences. Advocacy and awareness raising is key in realizing the human rights approach. The department continues directly and indirectly with its advocacy and awareness raising that will benefit young children. The department has several programs that go leads to provide a comprehensive response to gender-based violence. These programs have been institutionalized in terms of the life orientation curriculum across all grades and bands. Guidelines for the prevention and management of sexual violence and harassment in public schools. These guidelines were developed in response to the high levels of sexual harassment in schools. Teachers have been trained on the above guidelines during the period 2008 to 2009, and it has been posted on the website of the department. The Bill of Responsibilities, building a culture of humanity and accountability in schools. This program is captured as rights and responsibilities in the life orientation curriculum and includes gender rights. The program is supported by a Bill of Responsibility that is premised on the Bill of Rights, that each right comes with corresponding responsibilities. The program is further supported by a teacher training manual that provides the content and activities for teachers to teach about rights and responsibilities. The program has been supported by the department and many of our partners, including faith-based organizations. Thus far, all provinces have received training in the Bill of Rights. By using education, a training manual on constitutional values and school governance for school governing bodies and representative council of learners in South Africa's public schools has been developed and distributed to all provinces. School governing bodies and RCLs are the champions of the ethos and policies of schools. The manual provides valuable information on the constitutional rights of learners, including dedicated chapters on gender and sexual orientation, gender and sexual violence and harassment, and safe schools. The manual has been used in social cohesion training program, as well as the training of SGB and RCLs. what I can mention here is that the guidelines to respond to LGBTI learners in schools have been developed. It's been facilitated in all provinces through the training of teachers. Then the Speak Out Against Abuse, the department has developed an advocacy program for learners that inform them of their rights, and the course of action is now sexually harassed or raped.
By suggesting that you really focus on what this amendment seeks to do, decriminalizing consensual sex. What impact would that have in the school? Would it create problems for you? Instead of giving us a report, just focus on that, you know, a practical thing
Okay, if I can just out of my head respond to this, is that, you know, the Department of Education works on a restorative justice approach, and to criminalize children of that age, in our minds, will not be the ideal route to follow. We work developmentally and holistically in terms of children, and therefore that is the route that the department will take in terms of supporting those learners if engaging in sexual activities.
Members, I don't know if I'm out of order, but I think this captures what we want to engage with. Honorable Bong.
Yeah, thanks, Chair. Well, the first question would be, I would just wish to know what he has not told us what is the position in the Department of Education, his position in the department. But secondly, I think well, I'm not out of order, Jen, but what I was looking in the main from the presentation or from the Department of Education is effort decriminalizing while there are other measures that they will put in place in terms of ensuring that they support this decriminalization. Because part of what we had in the public hearings was that children complained, these adolescents complained that there is a subject that we are being taught about at school. But that subject didn't tell us that we must not engage in sex because we'll get HIV, we'll get STDs. It is not educating us to the level of understanding that this thing is wrong. So we need to take into that part of education. So I thought the presentation should just try to assist us and show us how would that gap, how would we close that gap, and how, what would be the steps then to comes from here. I appreciate what I see there, but I think I'm not getting to exactly where to addressing in this of decriminalization, sir. Thank you.
I think that is very important what you are saying. It really helps us to focus on what will assist the committee. We appreciate the work that we have done, the report that we have given, but we are people in need of assistance. So if you could follow those guidelines, I should do that.
Reference is made to specific subject which learners feel that they are not benefiting from. And when these issues are dealt with in terms of sexual activities within the life orientation curriculum, and that would be part of the second question that I thought I'll just go through. So if I can speak there, if that will help. remember the different phases the stable has on serious materiality education. Each spoke in the various phases. The foundation phase level, we already started the personal and social well-being of the children. We now talked about their bodies, keeping bodies safe. Then from the intermediate phase, personal and social well-being again, there is focus on social responsibility, health and environment responsibility, respect for own and other bodies, child abuse, issues of age and gender, HIV and AIDS education, the basic facts, HIV and AIDS education, dealing with stigma, HIV and AIDS education, the myths and the realities. Then the senior phase, the development of the self in society, changes in boys and girls, puberty, conflict of sexuality, sexual behavior and sexual health, common diseases and HIV and AIDS, TB, diabetes, obesity, decision making about health and safety, HIV and AIDS. And then within the FET phase, development of the soul in society, changes towards adulthood, decision making regarding sexuality, relationships and their influence on well-being, gender roles and their effects on health and well-being, now is required to adapt to change as part of ongoing health lifestyle choices. At this stage, it still does not answer the position of the department in terms of the ED to the age group between 12 and 16. And then colleagues, what else? Honourable members, what I can say is that these issues are addressed within the curriculum, and that is the driver of all prevention within the department, which within the schooling system, is to create awareness around these issues that are impacting on the lives of children. As for the department, as I have said, the whole issue is about the decriminalization, and from the department side, that will be supported, because our focus is not on the criminalization of children. And I hope that answers.
If I listen to Honorable Bonger's correctly, he was saying children are pointing out the inadequacies of what you do. And that raises a further question as to how much do you allow children to speak for themselves? You know, I remember when I was at Inform 1, they would ask us to debate whether abortion should be legalized or not, and we're children. And we'll debate it. And that helped us to make a conclusion as to what the department or the school should do. But if you say the department don't yet have a solution or a position, it means that all solutions must come from the department and that the children don't have the right to participate and contribute.
I would just like to raise
the issue of there's an affidavit in the court proceedings by a large number of headmasters that have indicated their concern with the impact that decriminalization will have in their task. Now, we appreciate the court has given its decision, but those headmasters seem not to be in line with what you've told us in the department. So they are saying it's going to be very difficult for them to discourage adolescents from engaging in sex if it is decriminalized. And that is papers that were dealt with in the High Court, their arguments, but not in the Constitutional Court. But I think it's important for you to be aware, literally hundreds of headmasters, or say 200, I think, odd, from schools, and that is a challenge that we're going to have going forward, because the court has said it must be decriminalized. Now, there's very little stature to the deterrent impact, and the court accepted that the state did not prove that criminalization had the desired deterrent effect, and the NPA said the same thing today. But what we don't know is what will be the impact of decriminalization once the message gets out, and that's why we are pained to say that decriminalization does not mean that children should engage in adolescent sex. And that element needs to be taught more, I would think, or that message, so that headmasters do not sit with the problem where they were previously able to say, it is criminalized, don't engage it. Now they say it's going to be more difficult. Thank you.
You know, this moral decay we're talking about could also be a reflection of underdevelopment of society. And the Department of Social Development basic education should actually be taking the lead in developing society, because there's an African idiom which says that if you want to break a log, you break it when it was still wet, which means it's easy to educate society at a younger age than much earlier. So the fact that with this moral decay may be that social development and basic education are not effective. So maybe that one, the two departments must come back to us, because we don't want to make a law and be told that we made a wrong law. We need to hear you. So far, I think what we have heard from you also leaves something to be desired, and the fact that social development are not here is a matter of concern as well.
Thank you, Chair, and to welcome the presentation of the Department of Education. To say that indeed the Department of Education is one area that really must be in the leadership of education on issues of sex amongst children. Because at the end of the day, if we go into to have a society of children who are not really engaging in sex, one of the institutions that's supposed to play a leading role is the Department of Education. And unfortunately, in our game, if you look at sexual relations between children, most of it takes place at school. And remember also at school, it's also about then a teacher, sex also. So a lot of sex problems also are within the education sector. And it will be good to see the sector itself really playing a leading role. You talk about the Bill of Responsibilities and the manual that actually focuses on social cohesion. Do you also utilize the Charter of Positive Values of Moral Regeneration Movement of South Africa? Because instruments like those that need to be utilized. But what's positive is that you're actually saying that the department itself is really supporting decriminalizing Section 15 and 16 of the bill. And I'm taking into consideration the comment that was made by Honorable Schwartz about the hate masses that have actually made the different submission, which is something that we need to look at. And also the age between 12 and 16, to what extent will this be something that is workable? Taking into consideration some of the inputs that are actually made by some of the presenters in terms of vulnerability of young children. is what we will continue to look at. We actually look at how to do adjustments to come up with the final version of a bill in a way that would manage to re-educate this one to the court order. Thank you very much.
You know, we need good results. We don't expect you to leave a classroom and do other things. But I would have thought that organizations like Contralesa, that NICSA, that would partner with them and have a dynamic relationship. They could help you with this bill of responsibilities there that you keep the classroom. But also, there's this thing called Satanism. I understand that part of this Satanism is some obscure sexual activities, drinking of blood, and now it is prevalent in schools. And you can't expect schools to solve this thing. And again, the question is, why don't you partner with the controllers, NICSA, and get them to have programs to address this thing so that you can have children learning in fear, but also you can use school time to be solving these kind of things. There must be a platform somewhere where these things can be dealt with. Honorable members, is there still something else? If not,
Chair, I'm in your hands, but I'll be very, very quick if you allow me to talk. Thank you, Chair. Chair, honourable members might recall two weeks ago, sir, when during the course of public hearings, I think it was you yourself, Chair, that raised or asked the department to have a look at the possibility of. Thank you, sir. And as I was saying, the department was asked to have a look at another possibility or to explore another option. We heard the various NGOs and some of the other institutions saying lower the age to 10, increase the age to 14, and the question was raised, can we deal with these things in this bill? Will the Constitutional Court allow us to do something like that? So we've had a look at that, and I think we could say that the Constitutional Court's judgment is not an impediment to have a look at these other things that the committee has asked us to do and to come up with an option. So we've prepared a document, I think 3 or 4 pages, and I think Mr. Romano's got it there. That's merely an option that has been developed. I don't want to say it's necessarily the department's position. It's a new line of thinking. We haven't had the department had an opportunity to consult on that. It is a whole new line of thinking, but it's something that the committee requested. And the document itself, I suppose the core of the proposal lies in the proposed amendment or possible amendment of Section 57 of the Sexual Offences Act, dealing with admissibility of consent. And there are also, that's the core, there would be consequential amendments to some of the other provisions in the Sexual Offences Act, and the document also sets out some of the implications of the proposal. So I thought it might be worthwhile if the members could take a copy of that. It was this committee's request for us to have a look at something, we prepare something. Maybe members would like to have a look at during the course of this afternoon and this evening. And I understand we're meeting again tomorrow, and maybe I can ask then Mr. Dupria to go into further detail about the option itself. I also recall in one of the NGOs indicated that they were going to come up with a document as well, and I haven't seen anything like that, and I'm wondering whether the two have anything in common. Thank you for the opportunity, Chair.
Yes. Indeed, that was a community law center. It produced a one page. Can we agree with Advocate Bassett that tomorrow we get Advocate Kaplan to give us more flesh on that? And I don't know if it would be out of order that we could even send these proposals to other stakeholders and ask for your comment as a further option that you make from these deliberations. Honorable, thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson, and thank you, Chairperson. I think it would be a good idea for us to actually send the proposal on amendment of Section 57 to other stakeholders just to look at it, because in a way it actually brings about some balance. Thank you, Chair.
And thank you very much, all of you. You are invited to lunch, I guess, see ya.
Oh, so you are all invited to lunch, and you deserve it. You did very well. And enjoy the freedom of Cape Town. I'll phone the mayor to confirm that you are indeed welcome to have the freedom of Cape Town for the shop.
Thank you.